Huh, just not writing that one exam would have been, I would never even have thought of it. Like, I was opposed to writing the exam in the first place. So, it's a series of like low probability events that all transpired to this.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of People's Stories. I'm your host, Priyanka Ota. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have fun listening to the session as well as probably get to know something more about this particular profession. So, yet again, thank you so much for joining. Stay tuned and have fun. Hey guys, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm super excited to introduce my guest for this episode and have actually been looking forward to this conversation. So, welcome, Sohil, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Priyanka, for having me here.
Pleasure is all mine. For our listeners, a quick introduction from my side. Sohil is working as a senior vice president at Loadshares Private Limited in Bangalore, India, and has had a very fulfilling experience in the area of strategy. So, yeah, for the next 30-40 minutes, we are going to talk about his journey, what drives him, and you know, where he comes from and those kind of things. But before we dive into these topics, maybe we talk a little about you, Sohil. Where are you coming from and what's your background like?
Sure. So, Sohil this side, I actually one of the people who were born and brought up in Gurgaon. And Gurgaon was not as famous as it is now when I was born, right? And we saw the entire city mushroom around us. I remember in like 98, 99, when the first set of offices and malls started coming up, like the area of the town that was considered like hitherto a jungle, those are the unsafe places to go into, or you generally just drive past very quickly, right? Those places started becoming the happening spots of town. And it was quite exciting to just all of a sudden get engulfed by all this thing that was happening around. So grew up in that sort of setting, was in Gurgaon schooling till 2004.
And so your schooling also happened in Gurgaon? Or did
correct.
You come
till,
to Delhi? Okay.
So till 2004, I was in Gurgaon. Hmm. So I was in a convent school that was till class 10. Right? Hmm. And 11th and 12th, they did not have classes there. And then I decided to do schooling in Delhi for 11th and 12th because that was a thing that people do usually, right? Because you get access to competitive exam seats in Haryana by virtue of being a Haryana citizen. Mm. And you get access to competitive exam seats in Delhi by virtue of being a Delhi student. So you get the best of both worlds and you try to maximize it. Right? So it's a very common thing amongst the Gurgaon folks to actually get class 11 and 12 schooling in Delhi. So I moved to this school called DPS RKpuram. Mm. Did schooling there.
So what kind of kid were you? Like, were you the studious kind or the naughty one?
I was not very naughty. I was naughty till like class 3, class 4, when most kids are. But then I think I became generally studious. I think till class 10th I was pretty studious. 11th and 12th, the transition to DPS RKpuram really helped. Right, because in my school, I would be famous, of course, right, because I was topping every year and all that, and people knew me. I was doing a lot of extracurricular competitions. Hmm. But then from that school, there were three people who went to DPS RKpuram.
Okay.
And DPS RKpuram had a batch of 1,500 people for my class, right, for class 11. Hmm. So you basically had to start over, right? You had to establish yourself in a setting, and it could become a little intimidating because a bunch of those kids had grown up in DPS, right?
Yeah.
So just in terms of, for instance, how they would speak to each other, how fluent their English communication would be, what sort of clothes they would wear, you'd realize that, huh, this person has been brought up in DPS and this other person, and it was literally half and half, right? Half the section was people who had come up within DPS and half the section was new people, and you could very easily make out that this, and it was like there was a visible distinction in the class also, like these two rows are new people, these two rows are old people. And so just
to add, for people who do not know what DPS is, it's Delhi Public School, and it's like one of the, I would say, good schools in New Delhi.
Yeah, and that explains the batch size, right? So people are clamoring to get into it, and they like for each class, like class 11, we had some 23 sections.
Wow. Right? 23 some sections. Insane. Wow, that's like, that's too much.
Yeah, now it starts with A and it goes up to like W or something like that. And we were all joking at some point, it'll become double A, double B, or A, 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 B. Sure,
has that happened already, or is it still at W?
I'm actually not in touch. I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he'll just one again got curious. So because you're saying that your grandfather was also an engineer, and then I'm assuming your father was also into some kind of white collar job. Was this studiousness and, you know, seriousness about study, was it coming from your parents and the upbringing, or, you know, were you more influenced by your friends or, you know, people of your age?
No, I think it definitely came from the parents. My father's was pretty intelligent. He wanted to become a doctor. But my grandfather was not well for an extended period of time. And as a result, he had to drop that and just study like BSc, because that would have been closer to home vis-a-vis where the medical education would have happened. And then my mother was in a library. So there is this, in every state, there is something called the State Council of Educational Research and Training, SCERT. Like national level, there is an NCERT that used to write books that you used to study. There's a state level version of that called SCERT, and my mother was the librarian there. So, and therefore I got access to a lot of books. I started reading, I started liking reading books. So I would read fiction, some nonfiction, some random like puzzle books and all that. So that got me excited. So it was more what the upbringing was than what I learned from folks at my age.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So, so then you did your 11th and 12th from DPS RK Puram. And that also kind of shaped, you know, the kind of person you became in that growing age of 15, 16.
Exactly. I think that was like, that was the 2 years that I learned the most in terms of like my own like personality, right? So I was obviously amongst the new people set of roles, right? When we started, gradually in 6 months I was able to make that transition to the other side, and I felt very good about it, right? And that meant that I had to break a little bit of, like, I was fairly introverted before that. I had to break some of these barriers in my mind, right? And actually go and interact with people, not be afraid or nervous of having conversations with folks that I thought were already in different fun groups of people with each, like, of people already, right? So that became quite exciting to do. And like, some of the best friends I had at that time were the oldies, right? Who'd come up within the DPS ecosystem. So that became, as I say, I think that, like, had I stayed in a school in Gurgaon where this sort of interaction would not have happened, I would have been a very different person.
Yeah, I mean, because you were kind of, pulled from your comfortable zone and put into a place where you had to kind of explore more and, you know, prove yourself. Right. And so then after that, what happened? Like, so then you would have started preparing for your bachelor's entrance exams, right?
Yeah, so this is actually a very interesting story. So because my father wanted to become a doctor at his age, so he wanted me to become a doctor. and I was very good at maths. At least that's what I thought at that time. And basically then what we decided was that we will, in India, you make this choice, right? You take physics, chemistry, and you take either bio or mathematics.
Yes.
Depending on whether you want to do a doctor degree or an engineering degree later, I took both. Right.
I think that was also popular at that time, right? Just take both of them and then decide later what you want to do.
Correct. And then when I took both, I also, in a way, decided that my primary aim is to become a doctor.
Okay.
Right. So I did 2 years of extensive study for that. I wrote all sorts of medical entrance examinations. I got through many of those. Right. And there was one particular one which I wanted to get through. It's called AIIMS, All India Institute of Medical Sciences. They have about 33 seats a year for the whole of India. So that's very little. So I missed out on that. However, my father, even though he wanted me to become a doctor, he said, please write the IIT exam as well. And I was very against it. But he said, no, write it. It's fine. We'll take care of it. So, okay. So I wrote the exam. I also then took out some time to study mathematics because I'd not done that in detail. But then what I did was I looked at the mathematics textbook. I said, this chapter I don't understand. I've never understood. So I'm not going to focus on this. This other chapter is too complex. I'm not going to focus on this. So I took, I looked at like 60% of the book. I said, this much I will read.
Okay.
And I read that. I spent a week. And what worked for me was that was the year when the examination turned from being a two-step exam to a one-step exam. So okay. Earlier, there used to be two steps. One was an objective, like multiple choice question exam.
Yeah.
And then that will be a qualifying examination. Once you qualify, there will be a proper subjective exam where you would have like very complex questions and you would have to solve on paper. And you would be graded on the subjective answer that you wrote.
Okay.
In my year, in the middle of the prep season for people who had started, they decided to change the exam to be just one step and only multiple choice questions. Right. That worked out, I believe, in my favor. Because I could suddenly use logic to solve questions because I see four options. I can figure out, okay, this sounds a little off, but this one doesn't look right and all that. And you could do some elimination. And suddenly I realized after I sat for the exam and I got the result that I had somehow gotten through.
I have to mention this part that Sohail is being very, very modest and humble about, you know, somehow got into it. I think that also has to do with, you know, you being, as you already mentioned, you were good in mathematics. So you already had the grip of, you know, how logic works in terms of mathematics.
Correct. No, I actually got lucky because there was also one particular very long question. So the format was very different, right? They were trying out various things. So they had this one probability question that was actually one question spread into five questions. So there's one preface and then five questions around that. That was for like 30 out of the 120 marks or something for that paper.
Okay.
And what happened, like probability is more logical than some of the other stuff that we study, abstract stuff we study in mathematics. So I was able to apply logic and I think I got that whole completely correct. And therefore I got 30 already, right? And and then I had to get another like 20, 30 from somewhere else, which I was able to get. So now after all of this, right, I then had an IIT admit and a few medical school admits. And that became like a tough decision to make. I remember like that stage was like very traumatizing because it is a non-reversible decision, right? And you don't have access to so many people who can make that decision for you, people who just go by gut and say, do this or do that. What helped me was this very weird. So I had this girlfriend at the time and her family was a doctor family. And she would be vehemently against me doing med school.
Okay.
And she would like arrange a couple of conversations saying this is why you should not become a doctor. You should take up the other thing instead. And that started playing on my mind. And then I obviously went to the two campuses I was choosing between. And the IIT
what was the medicine campus you were choosing?
So there's one called Maulana Azad Medical College in Delhi. So I went to that and I went to IIT Delhi. And I think the IIT Delhi campus just like stands out in terms of how good it is. I went there and I thought, hey, this is maybe where I want to spend time rather than the other one. And
fair
this
enough.
Is that silly thing, I made the decision to become an engineer instead. My father is still unhappy that he forced me to write that exam. But he's slowly coming to grips with that decision.
But I can actually imagine you like wearing a white coat and, you know, having like stethoscope around your neck. I mean, you would have been a good doctor as well, I think.
just not writing that one exam would have been, I would never even have thought of it. Like, I was opposed to writing the exam in the first place. So like it's a series of like low probability events that all transpired to this.
So typically, I mean, in terms of decision making, like what do you think really helps, you know, like from what I'm understanding, you are very, let's say, rational about the points that you take in picture and are not very emotional about thinking about it. I find that decision making a little more difficult than choosing between a good and a bad, because obviously between good and a bad, you can very quickly choose, you know, what you want, or a bad and a bad decision, or a good and a good decision. Like those becomes a little more complicated to choose.
Yeah, but see, I get a lot of these people who come to me and ask me for these decisions in life, right? Someone has two offers or three offers to choose from, or this college versus that college. Eventually, I go back and say, like, there is something that you really want to do, right? So do that. Like, I knew this in my case also, that I, and not just this, in other cases as well, there was an answer that was appealing to me for some reason or the other. And I realized that I was waiting for people to say something that confirms to my worldview, right? And this happens to everyone, right? If you want to do A over B, but you're conflicted between A and B because you're thinking that probably B is more rational. When you speak to people, anything that favors A, you'd be like, huh, that sounds good, right? That's exactly what I was thinking. But if anyone says something that favors B, you'd sort of play it down in your mind, saying, I know about that. Tell me something else, right? And
yes.
And so I have, like, while I sound probably rational, but like I go with this like heart first sort of decision making, assuming again that yes, like at some point, like because both of these options are good, things will work out. And like interestingly, I've never had to look back on decisions with any regret, right? So it's also, I think, because I'm also able to compartmentalize that phase in my mind, saying that was a decision I'd taken at that time. There's no point going back and thinking about that. Now, from where we are, we need to figure out what's best going forward.
That's actually a very good approach. I mean, I think a lot of people are kind of lost in the past, you know, like thinking about the past decisions they made. And if I could have done that, you know, this would have happened, like those kind of things. But it's all pointless. Like wherever you are, you have to move ahead from there. So, okay, so let's move ahead in your journey then. So you started with your, of course, BTech in IIT Delhi. What stream did you, what subject did you take?
I was in mechanical engineering.
Okay, all right. And so then, of course, 4 years went by.
Yeah, like great 4 years. Again, the same thing, right? All of a sudden, you're in a very different setting. And then like when you're staying in a hostel, which is very different from what the rest of my life had been, you are completely immersed in this pool of people, right? 24 hours a day you're spending with them, right? Right from the first waking moment to the end of the day, right? And so they also help you form like the deepest friendships that you can get, because you know like everything about the person, right? It's unlikely that later you will find out something about a person that you did not find out in 4 years, right? And I realized at that time we were also very tolerant. Like you would know that you hate a particular aspect of a person and you would still live with it, right? And you're continuing to be friends with that person till now. As opposed to, I think right now, if we meet someone whom we hate a particular aspect, I'd be like, rather stay away from that person. So I think great age to form great friendships.
For sure. Actually, it's very coincidental. Like this time when I was meeting my friends, when I came back to India, we were talking about this, like there was something that we were talking about and I got pretty like annoyed and pissed at what the person was saying. And I was like, if I would have met you right now, I would not have become your friend.
Exactly. Yes.
Throughout your journey, like you're mentioning that you were put into a different zone where you were and you had to kind of prove yourself again and prove your worth. And you found it very like challenging in a good way. So you basically worked on it. Now, when you look at yourself and you look at other people around you, like what do you think are those aspects of a person that helps them in, you know, coming out of the situation in a in a happy way rather than getting intimidated. Because in this particular situation, people can also get very, very intimidated and kind of push back on themselves, right? So what aspects do you think are helpful over there?
It's an interesting question. I think one thing that definitely worked in my case was that I had a lot of self-belief.
Right. So, and where does that come from, your self-belief?
I think it's innate. I have not done anything to work on it. I am just lucky to be born with it, right? I know that no matter how sort of awe-inspiring the situation is, it'll take me like a minute or two to adjust, but then I'll be able to deliver what I intend to deliver, right? In terms of impact, results, outcome, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, I've seen that work a lot, right? So I usually pump myself up, even if I'm feeling a little down. I sort of remind myself about like places and challenges and issues in the past that I've worked around. And that has really helped me. I think the other thing that people need is a little bit of an outgoing nature. And that's the one key change that I intended to do, right? Because let's say if you're feeling down and you're not an outgoing person, then it's going to be a hard thing for you to just sort of sit in and like just absorb all of those feelings within you, right? There are going to be other people who are struggling. It's important to have these open conversations with people. You need not be like one of those people who's always like out with friends, but you need to be able to like have deep conversations with people without feeling sorry for yourself that you're having that conversation. Right. And that's one of the things that I had to change when I went to Arkipudam.
So if we have to kind of sum it up, basically what you're saying is that if in case you feel whenever you're put in a challenging situation, you don't necessarily have to dwell on that challenging situation right away. Maybe you can also take time, you know, try and discuss and think a little bit more about it, and then start handling situations and also believe in yourself.
Correct. And the other thing that helps is also not thinking about that situation actively, right? Which is the going to a cafe, reading a book part, right? Which is just like divert my mind from that particular problem. And then when you suddenly think of that with, let's say, a fresh mind, sometimes you sort of figure out a very different dimension of how to approach that particular problem.
Actually, this happens a lot in for example, Sudoku or puzzles when I solve them. So when I'm looking at that thing for a long time, it's like you're not able to figure it out. But then if you look somewhere else and then start looking at it again, you immediately see, you know, okay, this is what I was, you know, where I should focus on. So I think that also helps a lot. That's true. Okay, so then let's move ahead. So basically you finished your bachelor's, and then how was your professional journey like?
Yeah, so the first job I got was at a consulting firm called A.T. Kearney.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called Kearney. I joined them in 2010, was there for 3 years. I think it was like one of the best first jobs we can get, because this was a management / strategy consulting firm. And we were a bunch of people who were advising senior leaders from different companies on what to do, right? Whether it's about some profitability enhancement or market entry strategy or something else. And that just like, while you know that it's not exactly going to be exactly what you tell those people to do or what your recommendations are, but it is a great finishing school for someone who just like who wants to transition from academics to a proper sort of a white collar job, because every single aspect of your professional life is something that you have to focus on, like how you present yourself, how you speak, how you write documents, how you actually solve a pretty challenging problem, how you work with a team that constantly changes. So we had, every case would have a different team. So you're working with different people, different times, and each of them work differently. So adapting to that. And sometimes you're in different industries altogether. You're in different countries. Like my first case was actually in Thailand, where I was supposed to like help design a 3G bidding strategy for one of the telecom operators there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird thing to just have someone out of college as a part of a four-member team who's doing this, right, for an obviously for a large telecom operator that would know how to do these things, you would imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun because in a manner of 3 weeks, we had to understand the local market,
mm-hmm.
figure out what the positioning of this company versus its competitors was,
mm-hmm.
Figure out what the value or worth of a 3G license would be,
mm-hmm.
and then give them some recommendations. We also did some mock auctions, which was a lot of fun, right? So like we had like different people going into different rooms, bidding as different companies just to see mm-hmm. how these people would react.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things which typically a consulting firm would come and talk to you about, saying these are the kind of things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully I got to do that right in my first case. It was very exciting.
And so then, of course, because your exposure was like into management consulting space already, and you were already working into strategic consulting, I think that's what paved your path to further professional development.
Correct. So I did consulting for 3 years, at which point I thought I really, not all cases were like the first one, right? And I thought that I really want to actually see something through in terms of not just saying that this can be done, but actually go ahead and do it.
Mm.
And that's when I started looking out. And the typical path at that time was to do consulting and then PE or VC and then go do an MBA. I was also attempting to follow that path. But at that point, I got a call from someone who was connected to this firm called NephroPlus, which was at that time a fairly young company trying to get into the dialysis space in India. And that turned out to be an interesting conversation. Like me and Vikram, who's the CEO, we met like 3-4 times along with other team members at NephroPlus. And I thought this is probably closer to what I want to do, right? I wanted to actually not just suggest stuff, but implement and be in the thick of the action. And I thought this is closer to that. And I would get a hot seat to witness whatever was happening in the space. And this is a little before the boom of internet startups in India. So this is 2013. I think 2014 was when like a bunch of internet startups raised a lot of money. And that became like one of the like biggest exodus events from from strategy consulting to startups. I did a little earlier, but therefore I went to a non-internet company, but it was a great learning experience again, right? I was there for 5 years. Obviously, you and I interacted at that time. And then over that period, I think NephroPlus grew about 25x in terms of revenues, raised a bunch of, like raised 2-3 equity rounds, raised 2-3 different debt rounds, and generally became a profitable company well on its way to an IPO in the near future, which I hope happens soon. And then at some point, I decided that it was getting relatively easy for me there, because like you could wake me from sleep and ask me what was happening, I would tell you, right? Or pose me what you would think is a tricky question, but I would know, given that I had spent 5 years in that industry. And so I decided that let me now go to a more tech-oriented company. And that's when I left, like Vikram and I had a long chat, and then we planned the transition. And then I left and I took some break, but then I decided that I'll move to Bangalore and find something good here.
Okay.
Right.
And that's how you've now been with Loadshare for since then?
No, I actually joined ClearTax for a year. In the middle. So 2018, I went and joined ClearTax. I spent a year there. And then 2019, October is when I joined Loadshare. In the middle, I took like 2-3 months off, traveled a bit, and then took some like downtime, and then joined Loadshare. I've been here for now 3 years and a bit.
Okay. That's true. And I don't know if you've been put in this particular position, but typically let's say I think the more you're developing, the more you'll understand that you do not have to be myopic in your vision in terms of looking at only those smaller things, but you also have to get a bird's eye view of, you know, what's happening. But more often than not, what happens is that if you're working with bigger organizations and you're not at a CEO, CXO level, you might not know the whole picture. So you might not be able to connect all the dots, you know, you might not be able to, I mean, because you're not even aware of, you know, what's happening. Right. So when you say you have to pull yourself and, you know, see at the thing from a more bird's eye view, do you think this is also dependent on the kind of level you are? And, you know, like, do you think this would make more sense for somebody who's at a higher level? Or do you think people at lower levels also can start looking into things from that perspective?
No, you actually, it applies to all levels, right? Bird's eye view is relative. So when you're tactical, so there is this very nice, I've forgotten what the name of the thing is, but if you think of an ant which is crawling, it only knows two dimensions, right? If you then pull it up, then it can see the entire sort of plane, right? Versus if you take a bird up, then it can see a lot more. That's just the difference in level, but it's not stopping the ant to figure out a way to start looking at the plane from a higher angle. Maybe the field of view will be limited, but that is what is expected. You're expected to take what you have and make the most of it. If your field of view is limited, that's fine, but are you making the most of it? And if you are making the most of it, then people will recognize that effort. Then they'll say, okay, let me give you a bigger field of view, right? I will arm you with like wings that can take you a little higher, right? So that's how this works, right? I would expect this from every person in the team, right? To be able to lift yourself up. The extent to which you lift yourself up will depend on your level, but obviously the way you will be evaluated and you will be graded will take that into account.
Okay. One last thing that I want to ask from a professional setup point of view is that you have worked in, so basically your graduation is coming from mechanical engineering, which is like a very hardcore technical profile, right? And so you would have friends who would have gotten into very, very mechanical kind of jobs. And then you have pivoted yourself into management space and strategic consulting and those kind of things. Do you see like any kind of difference? Like, let's say if somebody is pursuing and trying to understand like what works best for them, like, do you see in terms of what kind of personalities fit better in which kind of roles and, you know, like that kind of suggestion?
I would say that there are obviously two kinds of people. There are people, like, I think personality wise, people tend to fall into either they are very hustly folks who like to do more 0-to-1 stuff, right? You tell them this is the problem, it's completely untouched, figure out a way to solve it, right? They will do a lot of creative stuff, they will get you an answer reasonably quickly, but they'll not be able to be the ones who can structurally through a process or procedure scale that from 1 to 100. That's the other kind of people that exist, right? Those are the people who don't think extremely short term at all times. They take something that exists and then are able to grow it. Both of these, though, that's a personality trait, but both of these require very similar kind of skill sets, right? You need to be very adept at problem solving, right? Which is on, and how you do problem solving changes a little bit between these kind of roles, but you need to be able to look at a problem, analyze this, do some prioritization in terms of what your analysis leads to, and then go ahead and implement, right? You need to be a lot more of a like a doer in the first one, a lot more of a thinker before you implement in the second one. But the best people on both of these categories actually mix the two, right? They just don't, like, the first category, not like the first idea that comes to mind is not something that's done, right? They will think a little bit more. The second one's also like they're not waiting for the perfect solution to do it. But what I found in life personally is that if you are generally okay to be challenged, to be given like hard problems or tough problems to solve, and if that is something that does excite you, then you're going to be able to do good in either of these roles. So I would say like the thing I value most is problem solving, and that comes from various things, right? It comes from obviously the intellectual ability, But it also comes from not being bogged down by a problem. So being able to uplift yourself whenever an issue occurs. It also comes from having a very diverse sort of set of views that you take in. Right. So if you, and I actually therefore value diversity a lot, right? It's not necessarily about diversity in an organization, it's diversity in your own viewpoint. If you only read books of a certain kind, only like economic worldview of a certain kind, political worldview of a certain kind, you're not going to be able to absorb like different ways of thinking, right? And you need all of that when you're doing problem solving. So one of the things I actively look for is people who have hobbies, right? So when I'm hiring, I definitely ask, like, what do you want to do in your free time? And if people have hobbies that they spend time doing, it might seem very tangential, saying, why are you, I don't know, writing about Korean movies when you can be working? But if someone's doing that, then they at least are, they have a diversion. They have something to do when they're free. And B, they're doing that to learn, like they, with the effect of doing that is that they learn stuff. Something gets imbibed in their mind, which they can use later. So I think having an open mind and being able to face problems are the two critical things that we need. And these get reflected in the kind of things that you've done and the kind of things you do in life when you have time.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually a very good point of view. Like, typically people would think that if I tell my hobbies, you know, somebody would be like, okay, then you're going to spend most of your time doing that. Yeah. But somebody could look at it as a different,
go into detail. Someone says origami is my hobby. It's like, show me stuff that you do, right? It's not, it can't be this big swans. It has to be like a proper like temple or something like that.
So you spoke about your core group of friends, and feel free not to answer this question if you don't feel comfortable, but you spoke about your core group of friends and you said, so typically we look up to like these core people, you know, and Three Idiots May, there is a dialogue which says that if your friend fails, it's good, but if your friend comes first, you do not like it. Like, so where do you see yourself in that core group of friends? Like, are you typically more successful, and that's why maybe you're not even, you know, not even coming in that comparison space? Could that happen?
No. I think there are very very smart, very highly capable, and people who achieved a lot in life in that group. So not in that sense. I think it is just even in Bangalore, for example, the group that I meet, like, there a bunch of folks who are doing various startups, right? A couple of them have sold successfully their startups. So you could go there and be like, okay, I need to probably try to level up, but those thoughts don't affect me, or I'm able to sort of keep those out of my mind. And I think that groundedness you can achieve if you just generally also step away from that small group, right? If you go walk around in the city, if you see what's happening, and you'll see that, okay, like, while if you're in the top X percent, then the top X by 10% will still appeal a lot more to you. But you're still in the top X percent, right? There's a lot of people who are in the 1-X category. And you have to sort of like look at who you are, what you've done, vis-a-vis that, right? And obviously you can't discount the fact that I've been lucky to have been born in a family that could afford education, right? That could afford to send me to, like, afford to help me write exams, send me to IIT and all of that, right? So there's so many things that have gone right that you can't just say, okay, this one thing did not go wrong. And that's something that I keep thinking of and helps keep me grounded in life.
Okay. All right. And so, what are you seeking from life? Like, what would you want written in your book, which could be read later on?
Very tough question, but like, I know I've had a few of these conversations. I think what I like the most, it's a very, very let down sort of an answer I think you're going to get. But what I like the most is having my own time, right? Is to be in control of my time. Whether it is work, in which case it is about what I'm spending time on, what sort of problems am I working on versus someone else, Or it is about my personal life, where I, like, if I've decided that I'm not going out, then I'm not going out. Right? You can't say that like 16 people are meeting, you're the only one who's not meeting, why are you not coming? And those sort of things just irk me a lot. So I want to be in control of my time, and I try to do that, and that time then goes into fulfilling some hobbies that I have, right? So that is what I get happiness out of, right? Spending time on things I love, and therefore not having to spend time on like random shit.
Okay. All right. I mean, from what I'm getting out of everything that we've spoken about, I think balance is your mantra. You just try to balance everything everything out, and are a happy soul therefore.
Exactly. I think I'm reasonably happy. And it comes from probably balance, being grounded. That's all.
That's good. Perfect. I had a wonderful conversation, Sohil. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I think I had a great time. And this turned, like, I was a little apprehensive coming into this, but this was a very pleasant conversation, light speaking about a lot of things, helped me introspect a little bit also, especially a couple of very pointed questions you asked. This is great, yeah. All the best for this one and for your future podcast. Thanks for having me.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in this particular episode. If you wish to follow me on LinkedIn, I go with the name Priyanka Ocha. Feel free to connect with me to write down any questions that you might have, and I would be more than happy to answer your questions or probably connect you to any of the guests that we've spoken to up until now. We also have a People Stories page on LinkedIn, which you can follow to remain up to date with the content that's going to come up next. To connect to the people we've interviewed and to generally participate in the upcoming surveys or LinkedIn Lives that we'll be doing. For getting in touch with Sohil, feel free to connect with him on LinkedIn. He goes by the name Sohil Bhagat. And yeah, I wish you all a very nice day ahead and happy learning.